Hi, I'm Allie Gertz.
And I'm Julia Prescott.
And everything's coming up podcast.
This episode is brought to you by a Connie Chung Christmas. Also brought to you by off-brand potato chips. Careful, they're ruffled. We are also brought to you by, we have a lot of sponsors today. Please bear with us. We're brought to you by those Golden Grahams. Oh, those Golden Grahams. Crispy, crunchy Graham cereal. Brand new breakfast treat. And of course, I mean the most important sponsor for this episode, we are brought to you by the inanimate carbon rod.
I thought you might have said NASA.
No.
They don't do sponsorships.
They don't do sponsors. I feel like people know about NASA enough.
And we tried to get Tang, but we just don't know where to find it.
We don't know where. We've called all around, including the president, with a beautiful double entendre. So, clutch your ant farm, listeners, and make sure you have those children's letters to God. Because today we are talking about the episode Deep Space Homer. Very excited to talk about this today. This is the 15th episode of the 5th season, and it originally aired on February 24th, 1994. This episode was written by David Merkin, directed by Carlos Bauza, and showrunner was David Merkin! Woo, 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 woo!
Ay, ay, ay!
Ay, ay, ay! Ha-cha-cha-cha! Yeah.
Yeah, and today we are talking to Ken Jennings. Hey, Ken.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good, we're excited to have you on.
Oh, I'm happy to be here.
And I think a lot of nerds that watch The Simpsons probably watched a lot of Jeopardy, too. I know that you usually, those are the two shows that you watch, at least in my house. So I think people are very excited that you're not only talking with us today, but talking about the episode that you mentioned on Jeopardy.
Yeah.
Oh, I love talking about The Simpsons. If I wasn't on this podcast, I would probably be talking about mid-90s Simpsons, like, just by myself right now.
So. Oh, great! Same with us. We have so much in common, we should be best friends.
I do feel like Twitter was created so nerds could have an easier way of talking about The Simpsons with each other.
Yeah, yeah, I second that.
Yeah, the larger the groups you're talking to, the more likely somebody is to like recognize the episode you're quoting, so that helps.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a shorthand, you know?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
What was the reason that you chose this episode? In addition to, although I imagine this is a large part of it, you having mentioned it on Jeopardy.
I do love the episode, but you know, there's dozens of episodes from this period I could easily have chosen. I mean, you guys have done like dozens of these, right? Are you running out of ones that people want to pick? When people pick one, do they have to like go to their fifth choice or
yes,
something?
Yes, sometimes they do. We save a couple of episodes just knowing, like Josh Weinstein came on for a second time. We knew since the beginning that we wanted him to talk about the Poochie episode because he's one of the writers and he knows all the stuff. But then we get people that have to go through like 20 to get to their
right.
favorite. But the good news is about The Simpsons is there are 20 amazing episodes. Like it's hard to narrow it down to 20 is hard. So,
yeah,
I mean.
It's a deep bench for sure.
Yeah, yeah. It's not like picking your favorite Beatle and everybody is left with Ringo. Or, you know, whichever
one. Marge would love Ringo.
That is true.
Yeah. No, I mean, we're at like 50 plus episodes, I think. Something around there.
Is that true? My God.
I think so.
What are we doing with our lives?
Yeah. So we knew that when we started this podcast that we would eventually reach the end of days. We are not quite there yet, but we're curious what that's going to look like. We're going to probably have to force someone at gunpoint to talk about an episode that they don't want to talk about. And then that'll be an interesting listen.
I felt so lucky when I mentioned, you know, the astronaut one, and I assumed it would have been taken and you guys were going to be like, what if you do the horse racing leprechaun one?
Well, this St. Patrick's Day, that would have been pretty smart of us.
The jockey underground world.
No, but I was very lucky that this one was not. It's an easy pick for me just because I stole a joke from it on Jeopardy one time. You know, and I steal Simpsons jokes all the time, but never before an audience of, you know, millions of elderly people or whoever watches Jeopardy.
Yeah, I'm sure that you've talked about this so many times, but if you can for our listeners, can you kind of explain what was going through your head before you decided to quote one of the funniest lines of that? Honestly, you made that meme as popular as it is, I think.
Right? Yeah,
like, there's
yeah.
no way that, like, Simpsons is so interesting just because, like, some quotes are, like, as soon as the episode airs, people are maybe saying it at work and at school, but it's thanks to the internet and screen grabs and all these different things that I think that they last as well as they do, and like, I know for a fact that, like, when that aired, everyone was so, like, was that a Simpsons quote?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
So excited.
It was such a bold move.
Well, it's hard to do. You don't have a lot of time. I feel like it was already a meme by then. Like, people were already saying it, but, you know, not just Kent Brockman.
Yeah, but, yeah.
At the end of the game, I was playing against IBM's evil game show supercomputer Watson.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
And
I remember.
It was I don't know if anybody saw the game, but Watson was very fast on the buzzer. So really, no matter how good you were, you couldn't really go toe to toe with Watson. It just had these amazing electronic reflexes. So Brad,
yeah, she's
and I,
a robot.
The two human players, are way down at the end of the final game, going into the final Jeopardy clue. You only have 30 seconds to write down an answer. But you have a little more, because your pen works even while Alex is reading the clue.
Ooh, yeah.
So you have maybe 38, 40 seconds. And I think I thought during the commercial break, like, hey, if I have time, I'm getting my ass kicked. Like, if I have time, maybe do a Simpsons joke, you know?
Yeah.
And it turned out the answer was super short. It was like, who is Bram Stoker? So not just like just a short a guy's name, but like a really short name. So I wrote that down. And then the music had like, I wrote that down. And then the music sort of started right then. And I'm like, I have the full 30 seconds. Like, maybe I can write down this whole long Simpsons quote on the screen. The screen's sort of hard to write on. It's like a light pen. Mm-hmm. from like a 1990s Amiga or something. Like, it's not the best technology to try to like write a long sentence in 30 seconds, but I just barely had time to write, I for one welcome our new computer overlords, which is the joke that it's a Kent Brockman thing about when he thinks the ants are going to take over the world.
Yeah,
right.
Towards the end of Deep Space Homer.
And he's so quick to just jump to that conclusion. Like, he can be so easily bought. That's what I love about Kent Brockman.
So it's immediate, funny. And they already have Chiron. Like, he turns to a second camera, and they already have an image.
I know, like I know.
of an ant enslaving humanity. I'm always impressed by that, like how quick they have the camera be with the graphic.
Yeah. Ken, I just wanted to say that watching you go against Watson is very near and dear to my heart, because I remember watching it. It was during my first like real job in Hollywood. And we had long hours. We were working on a show and stayed up at the office to watch Jeopardy. And so it was like this first moment where I felt like, wow, this must be what it's like to work in the biz. Like, it's sort of like, you know, watching the O.J. Simpson trial or something. Not that level, you know, but like here we are. We're all hanging out, guys. It just was something that I felt like everyone was tuning into at the same exact moment, and it just felt like very special. So I just wanted to thank you for that.
Oh, you're welcome. I love that it's some quintessential LA moment for you, you know?
Yeah.
What could be more LA than watching a guy lose on a game show in New York, you know?
It was so, I mean, it was just such interesting television, you know? And like, to have it described to someone in passing, like, oh yeah, we're gonna watch this guy go against a robot. It's like, have we gotten to that in society? Yeah, it was just really interesting, and yeah, I have fond memories of it, so I just wanted to say that.
We're fans.
It
was very nice. It was a lot of fun, even though I lost badly. It was a lot of fun because it did feel like the future. Like, finally, robots are on our game shows. You know, it was such a The Jetsons kind of a moment.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, which it felt also very Simpsons, because throughout The Simpsons, especially in, like, you know, the early seasons like 2 through 8 or whatever, they do a lot of like jokes where it's like flashing to what a game show looks like in the future. They do a lot of jokes of like, we saw it in like the I Didn't Do It episode with like, you know, whose disembodied head? It was like Kitty Carlisle's disembodied head, you know, like, you know, Match Game 2034. So they do a lot of those kind of jokes that it just felt like it fit in to that.
I feel like that is the future of Jeopardy, too. You know, Alex Trebek's head in a jar.
Absolutely. Which I think they've also made fun of. I'll have to research it, but yeah.
It's very Futurama, too.
Absolutely.
That might be a Futurama joke, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He's irreplaceable. So at some point, they're just going to have to upload him to the cloud or clone him or something.
Yeah, they can do it.
They've got mustache follicles, for sure.
Yeah.
I love the idea of you possibly choosing a different Simpsons quote, like one that's less pertinent, just kind of like woozle wazzle.
Dorcas Malorcas.
Yeah. Honk if you like. The fingers mean
taxes.
Did
you guys like, are you guys going to pitch me on what the right Simpsons quote was there?
Yeah. No. Yes.
I mean, yes. I mean, we always agree. Yes, no. And each other.
No, you clearly chose the right thing.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I sort of felt bad because I feel like a lot of people didn't realize that it was this Simpsons meme, you know?
Right.
So I felt like I was getting credit for a very smart joke that I hadn't written. And later I met, because he lives here in Seattle, I met George Meyer, who had written on that episode. And I asked him, was that a David Merkin joke? And he said, no, that was actually me. He said he always loved jokes about, he always liked like the ant holding the whip. Like he loves the idea of super advanced civilizations that still use weapons like whips and clubs and stuff.
Yeah, and in this episode, there's a lot of whips. The NASA guy keeps, well, I don't know what you would call it, a whip or whatever. He just keeps knocking out Homer and Barney throughout the episode just for no reason at all.
Excuse me. Are you the person that called NASA yesterday?
No, it wasn't me, I swear. It was him.
Sir, how would you like to get higher than you've ever been in your life?
Be an astronaut? Sure.
Well, welcome aboard. I think you'll find that this will win you the respect of your family and friends.
Respect? No! It was me. I made the crank call. I do it all the time. Check with the FBI. I have a file. I have a file!
Eh, better take both of them. I don't really think that was necessary. They wanted to be astronauts.
I know.
It's the act break twice. That same joke.
It's like, where'd you get that? Sent away. There are so many great, tasty jokes in this episode. I mean, it's a classic. So we're so happy to talk about it with you, you know, just for that. I feel like this is revered by a lot of Simpsons fans.
Well, I want to go on the record that I did get to apologize to George Meyer for stealing his joke. And he was very gracious. He was like, no, that was the perfect use for that, you know?
Yeah. Also, it's like you didn't steal it. Like, you weren't, I mean, maybe there are some dummies that don't know what it's from, but right. That doesn't mean that, you know, you should be held responsible for stealing a joke. You were using, that's what Simpsons quotes are for.
Right.
Simpsons quotes are for filling out your dating profiles and you know, Twitter bios.
Yeah. No.
I actually made a list of Simpsons quotes from this episode I say all the time, I found, but I still feel like it's not the highest form of humor. Like, on some level, you're turning into the coworker who still says, like, yeah, baby, in an Austin Powers
voice. Right,
right, right. You know?
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about it a little bit on this podcast before, and I think this isn't a direct quote from John Hodgman. I think John Hodgman is quoting someone else, but I really like, on this podcast, he said, referencing culture is not creating culture, which I think applies, but I don't know if it applies fully to making references and finding the proper moment to plug them in. I think that there is a little bit of creativity to that. You know, in sort of like meme culture too, it's like there's just a smidge of creativity to finding the right like line to say at the right moment, and you know, you make a joke out of it. You know, you add another layer. I'm giving you credit. Is basically what I'm saying.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm sure there are people who spend hours trying to find the exact right GIF to express their mood.
Ooh, you said GIF. Very controversial.
I've tried to switch in the last year, so
oh,
I'm doing
yeah.
Okay.
I feel like that's still up for debate, but that's another podcast too.
Yeah, I think it's one of Chris Hardwick's many podcasts.
Oh, yes, yeah. Let's give that guy more jobs. So before we get too ahead of ourselves with talking about the episode, for people that haven't seen this episode in a while, we like to catch them up with a brief synopsis. So in this episode, NASA is concerned by the decline in public interest in space exploration and therefore decides to send an ordinary person into space. Homer is selected and chaos ensues when the navigation system on a space shuttle is destroyed. Any other plot points that we may have missed with that? So he's a little too brief.
There's a through line about how Homer wants his family to respect him. They try to add the sort of the Jim Brooks emotional thing. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. You nailed it.
Yeah, and you know, I'm sure that we've either listened to the commentary or read the Wikipedias at home and in this discussion. We know that this episode was really controversial because it was such a big change for The Simpsons to have Homer go into space. Like, you know, we use this episode a lot when Homer jumps the gorge, where, you know, the only way that they were okay with that is if they let his blood, like his, he get him like get a little bit bloody, so it was realistic.
Up, yeah.
And then we go from something to Homer becoming an astronaut. Like, I understand why people would have been like scared about this, and the way that they did make that more realistic was making it about Homer needing to get pride and
respect. Yeah.
Yeah, and like there were other versions where they were just like, we'll make everyone in NASA as dumb as Homer, and they kind of decided against that.
Well, there was controversy among the writing staff specifically that they felt like it was too big a leap, but David Merkin wanted this episode to come out for a really long time, and he actually based it on the NASA's Teacher in Space project, which was to send ordinary civilians into space.
I love that the late Krista McAuliffe, who blew up on the Challenger, inspired this amazing moment of TV comedy.
I know. That's a footnote on Wikipedia. Oops. Welcome to the year 2016. They don't mention that at all. They're just like, la-da-da. It was inspired by this brutal thing that happened.
9/11 anyway. Inspired one of my favorite episodes of Hot in Philadelphia.
Yeah, it was all. It wasn't all for naught, you guys. it did something good, so I don't know.
So there's that kind of through line that you mentioned, and then there's of course the Barney stuff, which was fun to watch as well, just seeing Barney sober for the first time, and then this kind of competition, and of course a million references to 2001 A Space Odyssey.
Yes, of course,
which is always fun.
I love it when they make cinematic references, which they love to do. You know, they're very, I feel like a lot of the Simpsons writers are big cinephiles. So they, you know, for all the Treehouse of Horrors, it's a lot of Twilight Zone, and they always try to bring in some sort of cinematic element to each episode, especially in these seasons.
What I think is funny about this episode as a whole is that, you know, the writers were concerned about going to space being such a crazy thing, yet the inanimate carbon rod is just something that we all embrace. It's just like, well, that's normal.
Yeah, I know. God, I love the inanimate carbon rod.
I know that Matt Groening famously was against sending Homer to space because, you know, what do you do next week? But
exactly.
But I don't feel like it's that big a jump. I was thinking about this last night watching the episode again. I mean, this is the same season where it turned out that Homer was in a Beatles-like mega hit quartet and his kids didn't even know. You know, there's essentially an episode about how Homer was in the Beatles.
Yeah, absolutely. The B-sharps. So
it's not like the show is some regular domestic comedy and then this is the moment, you know. I feel like even in the first season, there's that one where Bart's working in white slavery in France and the other exchange student is a Soviet spy. It's not like a watershed moment to me.
No, I agree with you. And I think that they alternate between having more realistic episodes and these like complete out of the box episodes. I think that they do a really good job in balancing those two polarities. Yeah.
I mean, maybe with this episode, you don't get the horse racing leprechaun. Like, it's the first one that's essentially a sci-fi episode that's not a Treehouse of Horror.
Right.
But it very much feels like quintessential Simpsons, not like, whoa, this show is going off the rails here.
Yeah, absolutely.
But again, there are like a few elements in all of these episodes that where even if the plot is super realistic or insane, they always get some really absurdism in there. Like my favorite example in this episode, and I'm sorry to steal this from anyone that wanted to talk about it first, but the super intelligent chimps being a secret from NASA. No, I don't think we'll be telling them that.
God, they love chimps. They love chimps so much, and I love it. And then he scampers off and
roller skates.
Yeah, on roller skates.
It's a three-step joke. First it's the reveal of the chimp, then it's the British accent. Oh, it's actually four-step. Then it's the British accent. Then it's him hopping away doing normal chimp things. Ooh, and then you see the roller skate, and it's all in like 2.5 seconds. It's just an amazing set of jokes.
Absolutely. I know. All their jokes are so dense in that way, I find. Like, there's so many layers to all of them, and I mean, my favorite jokes are ones that also serve a purpose to the story. I think that that's like a real tasty morsel when it comes to storytelling in television. So, and they're so good at that. I mean, I just trust them completely that they've thought about it every which way, and, you know, they don't let any joke make it to script that isn't like, you know, having all of that packed into it.
An example for me from this episode is Homer's talking to Marge on the phone, and she mentions offhandedly that he, when she first met him, he didn't even know how to dial a touch tone.
Yes.
And then twice during the conversation, he just starts mashing the keypad.
Yes.
And it's a great joke because it comes back twice during the conversation as a callback, but it's also a great joke because it sort of it's a lot of their relationship, you know, that she sort of has this maternal feeling toward this guy who really is at odds with the modern world.
Right, right.
And, you know, there's a lot of pathos and sympathy to it about their bond.
Marge, I don't really want to go through with this, but being an astronaut is how I got you to respect me.
Homer, when I met you, you weren't an astronaut. You didn't even know how to use a touchtone. But I still respected you, and I always will, no matter what. Homer, you already dialed.
Oh.
But on the other hand, when you don't take advantage of an opportunity, you can end up regretting it for the rest of your life.
You're right, Marge. Just like the time I could have met Mr. T at the mall. The entire day I kept saying, I'll go a little later. I'll go a little later. And then when I got there, they told me he just left. And when I asked the mall guy if he would ever come back again, he said he didn't know. Well, I'm never going to let something like that happen again. I'm going into space right now.
Oh, I am so proud of you. And I know it's going to go just fine.
Yeah, absolutely. And what I love about The Simpsons writers is that, you know, that conversation would have been completely appropriate without that added joke. It would have served a purpose of Homer expressing that he's, you know, not sure about undertaking this huge thing of going to space, and you know, Marge showing her concern but also supporting him. But then they added this joke and it was perfect. Like, I feel like, yeah, they always find those little windows to insert things like that that doesn't take away from the story and it doesn't take away from the characters at all. It just adds another layer that makes it even better, and you know, something that you wouldn't expect from any other show, you wouldn't expect from this show, but the fact that they do it, I find it respects their audience in a way that you can't find in a lot of other shows.
Is there a theremin in the background?
I'm actually recording this from the Tower of Big Ben.
Oh!
and it in hasn't Seattle? Yet turned digital like in the future Hugh Grant Simpsons.
Oh, cool.
So that's a little loud every 15 minutes.
That's great.
That'll keep us on our toes. I like that. Mm-hmm. So we kind of go through the episode a little bit chronologically, but we'd love to hear some of the moments that particularly stuck out with you, maybe the first time or reviewing it. Just walk us through kind of like, what are the favorite moments of this episode?
Yeah, I rewatched it last night, and the thing that stuck out to me the most is just how many things in this episode I still say to this day.
Yeah.
It's not just the one I stole on TV. Apparently I had a deep well of others I could have gone to. Like, for example, this is actually more of my wife. Anytime she's in the middle of a sentence where she like has some kind of change of mood, you know, like, you know, at first I was worried about this, but then I realized, you know, anytime she expresses two different moods, she then goes on and does Marge's thing. You know where this is going, where Marge says, yep. Then I was a little bit sleepy.
I love that. And then
Marge is great in this episode. She really is.
Yeah, that's such a long-winded, intentionally so long-winded joke of Marge's that then is so just, I love the sleepiness in there. But then I also love Homer's, you were saying what now?
And there's another very long joke, Homer's monologue on the phone about Mr. T.
Yeah. I'll come a little
Homer
bit later.
Homer goes to the mall hoping to meet Mr. T, but he's too late, and Mr. T's already gone. And that's sort of the story, but then the joke continues for like this very long, drawn-out sentence. And then I asked the man when Mr. T would come back, and he said he didn't know.
Yeah, and then he starts to whimper. So great.
I find myself saying that a lot, too, you know, anytime there's some, you know, like I'm explaining how I... you know, was trying to get answers from customer service or whatever, you know. And when I asked him when the internet would be back up, he said he didn't know. That still comes in handy a lot.
I love that. I just love adding that weight to an innocuous moment.
Maybe you do this as well. A kind of just way of speaking, I guess, when the, I don't know what his name is, but the guy who's kind of like leading Homer and Barney says, you're both winners, but in other more accurate ways, Barney is the winner.
I said that literally last week. I was running a trivia night for a local charity thing. And I find myself doing that kind of thing a lot. And I nearly always get the chance to say that because at the end you want to congratulate all the teams, but you also want to bring the winner up on stage. And that's always the best way
to do it.
So
yeah.
I get to do that at least a couple times a year.
Oh, that's a good life.
That's a good life. You've really made it. Do they go, default, the two sweetest words in the English language?
It really does seem like this is the only Simpsons episode I've ever watched. That's what people are going to think.
I'm going to make that change to your Wikipedia page right now.
Like it's some cargo cult. I built my entire civilization on this one 22-minute Simpsons episode I somehow saw once.
That kind of reminds me, have you heard of the play Mr. Burns?
Yeah, it played here in Seattle, actually.
Oh, did it? Oh,
yeah,
great.
I did not go to see it.
Oh,
I should have.
Yeah, well, for people that are listening that aren't familiar, Mr. Burns is a play that just recently came out, and it's about like a post-apocalyptic civilization, and the first act is them trying to recall the Cape Fear episode of The Simpsons, right? and then the second act is like several decades later, and now it's become kind of part of like the legend of how civilization came to be from the start of time. And then the third act is like full on religion, you know, like like Mr. Burns is God, and I don't know, Sideshow Bob is Jesus. But that's basically the gist of it. And I think that it's, God, what a great idea. Sometimes you hear ideas like that and you're like mad about it. I was mad about that when I found out.
You're mad because it's so good. You wish you had the idea.
I'm also mad because I'm a big, I was about to go on a big religious joke rant. Never mind. I was going to say I'm mad because I'm a big religious freak. I think people can smell the atheism on me. Moving on.
When you're hosting these trivia events, do you also use second comes right after first?
Buzz Aldrin is very funny in this episode.
He is.
They make him do the whole, all this stuff in space, all this procedural stuff, and they even make him hum the battle hymn of the Republic. He must have been a really good sport.
Yeah, well, that's what, in my research, I found out that they were actually nervous about giving him that line, second comes after first, because they just felt like it would be, insulting to him. But he just was so down, and they just were really surprised by how playful he was, and he knows. So it just was a delight to hear about that.
Yeah, Neil Armstrong never did interviews, never talked about the moon, it was always just the same few quotes. But then Buzz Aldrin is like the opposite. He'll just open car dealerships,
right.
any kind of goofy thing, Buzz Aldrin will show up. So I'm glad we had both guys.
Right.
The whole PR continuum on the moon.
Yeah, and even Buzz Aldrin was in that great episode of 30 Rock where he shook his fist at the moon, which is kind of Simpsons-y. Shake harder, boy. Yeah, he just seems like a down dude.
I think getting old and eccentric has sort of helped, too. Like, he sort of turned into your crazy grandpa, but...
Oh, yeah.
That's what America wants.
Yeah, he leaned in completely. Right. And I appreciate it. Yeah, and I love that in this episode, to kind of change subjects, I love it whenever The Simpsons makes a dig at Fox. I think that that's always really fun. So they make fun of course, Married with Children. I don't think Home Improvement was on Fox, no. But they're making fun of the current primetime lineup.
Also, this finally has the toilet flush, which we love to quote so much.
By just saying flush?
By just saying flush.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
I say that truly anytime that I have a bad joke that doesn't go over well. I'm just I'll make it better. Just say flush after.
Yeah, no, completely.
The thing that we always said, I had a college roommate who would always do that bad Ed O'Neill impression, and he would say, no, Peg. And I just saw somebody do it on Twitter this morning. I saw somebody do the no Peg, and I was like, whoa, no Peg is still around,
Yeah.
Who did that?
That's a very small part of that episode. I don't know, some weird Twitter guy whose name probably changes too often for me to remember.
You just described everybody.
The public see our astronauts as clean-cut, athletic go-getters. They hate people like that.
Well, who do they like?
Mm-hmm. Here are the most popular personalities on television, or TV.
I did it! I supercharged my riding mower! Oh, no. I've killed Wilson. Looks like it's back to jail for me.
Al, let's have sex.
No, Pig.
Was your old roommate doing a bad impression on purpose, or just happened to be a bad impression?
I feel like the Ed O'Neill in that episode is not great. I don't know if that's Hank Azaria or whoever's the Ed O'Neill. No, Pig.
That makes it so much funnier.
It was sort of a second degree bad impression of a bad impression, but it is funny that way.
No, I always find that when it's I don't know, like a bad impression of a bad impression. It's funnier to me. It's sort of like somebody like, I don't know, quoting a famous line from a movie, but like one word off. Like it just does something to my brain that like makes me laugh. Because everything in my brain is freaking out and I'm just like delighted by it.
I wanted to talk kind of just about like the very humanizing things that The Simpsons does to kind of get super cartoony and then bring it back and then make it highly relatable and sad. An example of this is when Bart does something very cartoonish and also just, you know, little boy-esque. Well, he is a little boy, but him writing, you know, insert brain here, and everyone, yeah. Even Marge is kind of having a hard time stifling this laughter, which is great because she's super mom. She's just like, you know, don't do that, but then kind of can't help but laugh.
Right.
But then Homer wants to see it. He starts kind of like almost break dancing, like on the ground, like spinning around like a dog trying to see it, and everybody's laughing. And it just goes on for so long that it just gets so sad and it bums everyone out.
Yeah.
And I just think that's something that only The Simpsons does.
Right.
And Futurama, but same thing. But like, I love that. They could have just ended it on Homer spinning around chasing his head because that's really funny. But then making it sad makes it more human and therefore more funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, it gets a bigger laugh when it gets sad, you know, because you've seen cartoon characters laughing at each other's antics, but you never really see the laughter die in those shows. Like, it's always a freeze frame when people laugh or something.
Right.
So to actually see the laughter awkwardly die and be replaced with horror, you know, that's that's just the funniest thing you can imagine there.
Yeah, and I think that that's also a hard joke pitch for an animated show. Like, oh, no, trust me. Like, we don't need to, because I feel like everything is like, go, 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 go. Like, we have to, you know, make these scripts zippier. We can't have any, like, pregnant pauses. But to stand by that as the joke, like, no, I guarantee you this will be funny if we let this, like, peter out. it's a hard sell, but I'm so glad that they did it, and I think that's partly because they weren't, we found out recently from the Josh Weinstein episode, the network wasn't allowed to give them notes. They just got notes from the censors, which I don't think I knew previously.
Oh, really?
Yeah, which just makes heaps of sense.
heaps of sense. You nerd.
Yeah, thank you.
Speaking of nerds, I love Homer and Bart really do hate nerds. They're just so bored by them, and sometimes they're riled up by them. I love anytime that Homer like is really anti-nerd, but I love when he's watching the TV and the remote loses its batteries and he can't change the channel fast enough, and we're watching about the space program, which is painfully boring to him. With the three people that we see that are going to be in the mission are a mathematician, another mathematician, and a statistician.
And they all are identical looking, which
just
is beautiful.
Just Frank Grimes,
yeah, pretty much.
I feel like that's a runner that people might not understand now, because space is very hot now, and you know, you get millions of people watching on the internet when we land something on Mars, but I guess maybe people know, because this is a plot point in both Right Stuff and Apollo 13, but but people stopped caring about space launches on TV, you know, and the 80s was sort of a low point for that, you know, all these sort of boring, identical, week-long space shuttle missions. So they get a lot of fun out of that idea that what should be something very exciting, sending people to space, is just a nightmare for Homer, you know, that he would have to watch that for a second.
Yeah, that's something that I hadn't really considered, just because, you know, of when I saw it. Like, I saw this as a little kid, so to me it was just like, cool, the moon.
Right.
But yeah, I hadn't considered that as a nation we had kind of gotten like over it.
Right. Well, they're also like, they make the joke of, we're kind of scraping the bottom of the barrel with like what our space missions should be at this point. And in this one,
screws.
It's weightlessness on tiny screws. Yeah, I thought that was really fantastic. And then, you know, later in the episode, there's that great joke where they're all going, how's the spacecraft doing? I don't know. All this space equipment is used to measure TV ratings, which I think is a fantastic joke. And yeah, it just tracks with the whole theme of the episode, that they care a little too much about what the civilians think.
And
yeah, they don't really get into the fact that it's all funding related. You know, that's why NASA cares. That's why, you know, that's why there's children's letters to God or whatever,
right,
on the. Hey, why isn't it a space shuttle? I was thinking about this. Is the space shuttle like copyrighted? Can it not be a space shuttle?
Oh, I don't know.
That honestly,
I didn't find that out in my research.
Yeah, that does make sense, though. Just a copyright issue.
They do.
They make up some weird-looking space plane, but you do see the NASA logo on stuff.
Yeah. Right? Hey, what the heck?
Well, I actually found out in the stuff you may have missed is that the space shuttle is named Corvair because the Chevrolet Corvair, excuse me, of the 1960s was judged to be one of the road's most unsafe cars. So that's fun.
Yeah, that's fun. That's
in the wake of a space shuttle accident, that's a fun joke.
Yeah, I mean, you could say that in front of every single one of these jokes. yeah, no, I thought that was fun. And yeah, oh, well, they do make one quip about, like, public funding, you know, when they're deciding that they need a civilian to go into space to restore public interest. And they're like, well, you know, we'll have to do this like year-long search using like taxpayers' dollars. It's like, well, I wish there was a better way.
That's almost the other joke. You know, that makes NASA seem like this terrible, wasteful bureaucracy.
Right, right.
The Simpsons isn't doing space exploration any favors in this episode.
Yeah, no, they're not. But then I think they kind of did. It's like a half favor with having the next beat, literally the next beat, being Homer calling them and, you know, calling himself like a blue-collared idiot or something. And then the toilet flush. And they found their guy, so they don't even have to entertain that idea for too long. But still, yeah, they're taking shots at the big guys in this episode, and I love it.
Also, they made, I feel like this would have made kids want to go to space. Like, I'm like Homer, or, you know, whatever.
Yeah. You think that there was a drop-off in the question, what do you want to be when you grow up?
Yeah.
That it stopped being about being an astronaut?
Mm-hmm.
It became more about firefighters and teachers, maybe?
Yeah, exactly. Or animators.
Yeah, animators.
Well, I get the idea you guys are quite a bit younger than me. Is that right? Did you see this episode when you were pretty little?
Yeah. This came out in 1994. I would have been 3 years old.
I was 6 years old.
So you saw it in reruns as a kid, maybe?
Or 7 years
college?
Old.
Yeah, I saw it. So Simpsons, growing up, watched it consistently anytime it was on. But as soon as the DVDs came out, that was just something that my dad and I would do every single day. But it was on every single night in syndication. But the new episodes, you know, whatever season it would have been when I would have been watching it, those were on Sundays. And so I just always had it on. It was always on, but not chronologically. And that's one of the reasons that, like, it wasn't until kind of that I got a little bit older that I kind of knew which season was what. Because as a kid, they all kind of just blended together. And I was just like, it's kind of weird that they look a little different now. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And I had a dad that would tape episodes on VHS tapes illegally. And and then I would have like these like VHS mixtapes that I would just like watch every single day forever and ever.
Let's all raise a glass to this.
So 15 you're,
minutes.
Yeah. Is that a St. Patrick's Day thing, too? That all the Catholic churches in the whole world are every hour on the hour? It's like a drinking game?
It's the chimes of... that's the Westminster chime, so it's actually very anti-Irish.
Oh! See, we're all learning.
So was this... did you see it young enough? Do you think this is formative for how you think of space travel and NASA? Like, is this episode a big part of...
You know,
like,
what? Yeah.
What the right stuff would be for me?
For me, absolutely. Because, like, I can't think of something that I would have seen before this that involved space. Like,
right.
Aside from, well, actually, that's not true. Twilight Zone is my introduction to space travel, but it was always terrifying.
Right.
And it was usually people that, like, ended up in different dimensions, or, you know, his best friend and only companion ends up being a robot, or, you know, any number of things that are terrifying. This was the only one that was kind of just like, hey, fun.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. It was very much hay fun for me. And it's not like I ever like seriously considered that I would be an astronaut at any point in my life. But I definitely would think about this episode in relation to space until I read a couple years ago. I don't know if you've read Packing for Mars by Mary Roach.
Right.
Where it was all about like the training of people that would go into space, et cetera, et cetera. That paints a pretty bleak picture of what it's seriously like to go into space. It doesn't seem like a fun job, but you get all the glory, so that's pretty cool.
The food's terrible, and it's almost impossible to poop.
Yeah.
Like, you have to watch videos of your own poop going in the tube to try to practice. It seems that book is a bad scene, I think.
It is a bad scene, yeah. And then she goes into like the other countries and how they do the space program, and like the Japanese one is like very psychologically like, you know, like, oh, what did you mean by being the first to eat your lunch? Ooh, what did you mean by being the... It's very like, what? This is Shutter Island. Anyway,
fun.
Yeah, it's kind of fun, I guess.
Yeah, how old were you what were you doing in your life when this episode came out, and had you already been a big Simpsons fan?
I was a Simpsons fan. Simpsons came on the air when I was in ninth grade. I'd seen some of the Tracy Ullman shorts, I remember.
Awesome.
But I missed this when it came out, because it came out in 94 when I was taking a break from college. I was in Europe.
Ooh.
So I missed like a couple like peak era seasons of The Simpsons. So I saw this in reruns in, you know, later in the 90s. Same kind of thing, you know, some station that played it twice a day, and we would just watch every syndicated Simpsons we could. And you didn't know which one it was going to be, so you were hoping it wasn't one of the weird ones where Homer talks like Walter Matthau, you know. It was always just Russian roulette every day. I hope it's one I haven't seen. I hope it's one I like.
Yeah. Kids today won't understand that plight at all.
It's the opposite of binge watching. Like, we need a word now for what it was like to not binge watch things, because it was weird.
Yeah. Of like the gamble to actually go, oh, I hope this happens. It's like, no, everything's instant now. You can control what you can watch at any given moment.
Pick the exact Simpsons you want to watch right now. Wait, is that true? Is it on demand on whatever that service is?
Yeah, it's on FXX.
Though, right. I mean, you could facilitate or I guess simulate that feeling when you do. They have an option on the FXX app. Jesus. where you could do like a mixtape shuffle of any episode that they decide that you should watch at that moment, and that's kind of fun. Sometimes if I'm, you know, doing another activity and I just need something in the background, I'll do a mixtape one, and that's, you know, it's a lot of later episodes now, because there are more episodes post season 10 than there are up to season 10, so it's a lot of stuff that I am not as well versed in, but it's still fun.
Yeah, percentage wise your odds aren't good of getting an episode that you would have put on yourself.
Yes, that's true.
and getting worse every week.
No comment.
Well, there should be a thing where there's a battery of psychological tests, you know, where they, you know, they ask you a series of like Blade Runner style questions, and then they give you the episode that you need.
Oh, I love that. That's great.
I just love anytime Blade Runner is referenced.
Yeah. No, but I think that you should fill out a profile and, like, you know, answer a bunch of, like, almost BuzzFeed quiz-like things of, like, which do you prefer, summer or buffets? And it's like, what?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it would deliver the exact Simpsons that you emotionally needed.
Yeah, yeah. I love that. Let's put our taxpayers' dollars toward that.
What do you think that if you took that test today, what do you think the episode would be? What would the results yield? What are you in the mood for, you think, at this point in your life, or just this this lovely St. Patty's afternoon?
Yeah.
What are you feeling?
Well, I feel like I was joking around that I came down a little hard on the new episodes, but I've actually been watching those, and it's actually for me a toss-up, like watching one that I've, you know, some peak era 90s Simpsons that I've seen 30 times, you know, the Be Naturals or whatever. Versus
Be Naturals
some new
was
one
their later that, surfer band.
You know, and when I say new, I mean like 2004 or something that I've never seen before. And you know, and watching that for the first time. So I'm actually a pretty big fan of, you know, there's hundreds of Simpsons I haven't seen, which I am now watching.
What do you show to your kids? Do you show them The Simpsons at all? But and then also like, you know, what era?
Yeah, I mean, they're, like, it's weird when you're a parent exactly my age, because for me, Simpsons was never a kid's show. You know, I think every generation but mine, including the one before me, assumed it was a kid's show. But because it came on right when I was in high school, you know, we were all like, oh, this is smart, not like those kids' cartoons. So I have a very hard time putting it on for my 9-year-old and thinking this is what 9-year-olds should be watching. You know, they should watch Phineas and Ferb or some other kind of Simpsons with the edges sanded off. But my son is now 13, and he watches a lot of that era of Simpsons because that's what we have on DVD. In fact, that very season, you know, Monorail and all that stuff.
Oh, that's great.
So does it hold up? Do you think that he's enjoying it as much as we would have? I mean, like, I don't know how much of our love of early Simpsons is based on when we saw it as opposed to just how amazingly written it is. And I think you could objectively say that The Simpsons is a very smart and funny show, but people do argue with us all the time saying just like, you liked it because you saw it as a kid. And I don't have any kids that I get to kind of experiment on.
You should get some kids that you can
experiment
on.
Come over to Aunt Allie's house.
Like Ukrainian orphans or something.
Yeah.
No, that's too many variants.
Or Albanian exchange students like in season one. Hello.
But yeah, does your son like The Simpsons, or are there other shows that just do more for him? Is it dated yet?
No, I would come down pretty strongly on the non-nostalgia side of it. Like, I feel like it really holds up really well against other TV that he sees today. There's references he doesn't understand, but that actually doesn't stop him either. Like, he watches a ton of Mystery Science Theater, which is thick with 70s and 80s references, 60s references even. And he's okay with that just because he likes the vibe of it. Yeah. But I think Simpsons play, like, watching this last night, I thought, this is still, like, what writers' rooms shoot for today, you know?
Totally.
Coming up with something that works. There's one joke I noticed in the bar with Barney where the NASA guy says, "Son, would you like to get higher than you've ever been," or something?
Oh my God!
And they skip over the joke. Barney says, "Be an astronaut, sure." You know, they skip over what you think the joke is going to be,
which is
and
the joke.
That's a very modern 30 Rock kind of a thing to do. But yeah. I was just so surprised to see it in 1994.
Yeah, every choice they make in this episode is correct. Yeah. Every single choice.
Yeah, like they always have some kind of button on every joke. Like when after the training is successful and they cheers with champagne, we get that great montage of Barney kind of going right back into his alcoholism, goes through, it's just making me laugh because it's so funny. But he takes off, falls into a pillow factory, and then is run over by a marshmallow truck. All funny. But then the guy saying, "I don't understand it. That was non-alcoholic champagne." Just the silliness that doesn't need to exist but does is so special.
Yeah. They put a hat on a lot of jokes in this episode.
There's the all the crazy stuff is going on in space, and the ants are doing a separate set of subtitle jokes. Like the ants say, "Horrible, horrible freedom," which knowing George, I was like, "That's got to be a George Meyer joke." And sure enough, on the commentary, they say, "Yeah, George Meyer, that's George Meyer's joke." And I thought, "Yeah, I knew it."
It's always so fun to be able to detect whose joke is whose.
I love that about diving deeper and deeper into rewatching The Simpsons and learning more about it. I love that element.
And I remember watching a documentary once where these animation nerds could totally tell who had animated, you know, Ariel or Mickey or whatever in which scene. And I thought, that is so weird and lame. But now I find myself doing it with Simpsons jokes.
Yeah, and it's just fun.
Yeah. And I feel like they're parallel things. Just like the more you dive deeper into a world, of course you can pick up on these little nuances that, you know, you wouldn't have been able to detect previously. And I think it feels like a superpower.
It does. That's something that was really big in my house, like just listening to Beatles songs, like kind of being forced to detect who wrote what, even though you could very easily look it up. Like my dad was like, "Who wrote this one?" I was like, "I think it's George."
Your dad demanded you answer, like you were at the dinner table going over SAT questions?
A little bit, yeah. I was a horrible student, but I knew everything about the Beatles.
Well, that worked out, I think.
I do. So we obviously kind of started this whole episode talking about the ants section, just because that's kind of the Jeopardy thing and all this. But I love the subtitle so much of the fight that the ants are having of protect the queen. Which one is the queen? I'm the queen. No, you're not. You fool. Blah blah blah. It's so funny. But I also just love the idea that ants wouldn't be able to tell who their leader was.
Yeah,
because they all look alike.
Yeah, no, it's super fun. I love that added world to this episode. Again, it's like no opportunity is squandered for a joke.
And we haven't even talked about former President James Taylor.
Yes. Yeah, I love that so much.
His,
I love how
all the stuff with his is so packed with just funny phrasings. Like, they establish that he's from, you know, he knows all this stuff about Martha's Vineyard and Art Garfunkel, and he solves the ant problem with that knowledge. Yeah. And then he says something about Rueful about how you don't understand our resort town ways.
Yes.
He's so funny.
Yeah. I also love I don't remember if it's Buzz Aldrin or who it is that says, "With all due respect, this isn't a good time for your unique brand of bittersweet folk rock."
Yeah. I know. And then I love how testy he gets. It's like, "Listen, you're just going to listen.
I'm not as chilled back as you thought I am."
Yeah.
I love this on a personal note, just as... you know, the Simpsons are a huge inspiration for me musically, of just where, I mean, obviously this is James Taylor, but having very beautiful music while something insane and very silly and funny is happening, I think is a big source of kind of what I have tried to do with my stuff of just like, well, it sounds pretty, but did you know that there are ants and ruffled chips floating in the background? By the way, those chips were computer animated. One of the only times that they did that, at least up to this point, because they just really wanted to get the flotation and rotation going correctly. Mm-hmm. Also, that's the only part of the episode that was directed by David Silverman.
Yeah.
Which is fun for us.
Fun trivia. Yeah.
Are there any moments that we miss in this episode that you particularly love, and any quotes that maybe we missed?
Wow, we went pretty deep though, huh?
We did. I feel like we covered it, but oh, actually, I have one that I'm going to steal in case you were about to say this. But I love when they're having the Q&A with Homer, and they're asking, "Don't you think it's?" I'll ask the guy in the barbecue, apron.
Yeah,
I'll take this one. Yeah. The only danger we face is if they send us to that dreaded planet of the apes. Wait a second, Statue of Liberty, you maniacs, you blew it up. Damn you all to hell.
I love that moment so much.
Yeah.
How has Homer seen Planet of the Apes and remembered the ending perfectly and never realized the twist ending?
Isn't that beautiful, though? I mean.
And also, the that's two great Planet of the Apes references from The Simpsons, at least, because the Planet of the Apes musical is one of the best things that exists in the world.
I hate every ape I see from chimpanzee to chimpanzee. It's so good. One of my favorite jokes in this episode is a very quick one, but they do it twice. 3, 2, 1, make rocket go now. 3, 2, 1, make hatch blow now. It's so perfect. And the fact
something
that it's
sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, is that the fact that it's delivered by this like straight astronaut dude is so perfect to me. Like, it's part of protocol.
Something else that I find myself saying a lot is, I think Homer says to Buzz, "If that is your real name," when clearly Buzz is not his real name. And I find myself saying that a lot about people, you know, where they're clearly not using their real name.
Yeah, like the fat Jew, if that is his real name.
Yeah, right.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. It comes up a lot online.
Yeah, I feel like that's a really good, simple Simpsons reference tag that you could just inject into any interaction.
And what about when James Taylor says, "Gotta go"? Is that the first time that the Simpsons has had "Gotta go" in it?
That's the first time I've remembered hearing it.
Yeah,
but
that's great. And it's such a tidy way to get him out of there. It's so perfect.
Speaking of tidy, how about when the rocket lands at a newspaper reporter's convention? You know, that gets rid of a lot of chuffa right there.
Absolutely. Yeah, everything about it is so just perfectly executed.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this is a perfect episode. You picked a good one.
Yeah, good job.
I'm the real hero here, pretty much.
You really
are. In a more accurate way, I'm the funniest writer of Deep Space Homer.
You are the real life inanimate carbon rod.
Yeah.
What was interesting to me, I didn't realize that David Merkin had only written like this episode, and then he worked on a lot, but this was like his first like legit episode that he worked on.
I'm not sure if that's rare for a showrunner
I don't know, but it's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. And just some history of David Merkin and his other work, just because he wrote on a ton of shows I love. Three's Company, Gary Shandling, Larry Sanders, and was the showrunner on Newhart, and he also directed Rami and Michelle.
Oh man, he's the best.
He made a lot of things that make us very happy. Mm-hmm. Including this episode.
Sorry.
He directed Romeo and Michelle.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
Which is, they're either doing a sequel. Are they doing a sequel or a musical of it soon?
My lord.
I know. They could probably be doing both. So we're nearing the landing. We love to ask our guests which Simpsons character, and it could be part of the main family or it could be like a Springfield character. Which character from The Simpsons do you identify with most?
Oh, wow. Which character from The Simpsons? I feel like if you ask this to a lot of people like me, they say Lisa. Is that true? Do even men say Lisa?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The smart ones do.
Yeah, it's because not just smart, but like really having been raised that kind of a kid where being the smart one was annoyingly part of your self-image. I'm afraid that's me. But also Flanders.
Oh, interesting.
Coming from a Mormon home, like church-going Mormon home, like I actually admire Flanders's, you know, sunny optimism in the face of obstacles. He's funny, but I also I admire him. I feel like he's the real hero of the show.
Yeah, I'm so sorry for mentioning being atheist earlier, Ken. Please don't smite me.
Well, I mean, whether or not I think you're going to hell, you're clearly going to hell. It
doesn't
matter.
Oh, yeah.
Whether you
it's going to be a party. If I'm going to hell, I'm going to take you with me. Which is another great line. In case people thought that I was just being insensitive.
Could be a little column A, a little column B.
A little column A.
It's not too late to be baptized by the Flanders.
Yeah, but I'm so busy. Yeah, I love it when they say Flanders is, or I guess they just being Homer. Yeah, that's a great answer. I love that. I feel like that's one of the first Flanders is.
Yeah, we haven't gotten Flanders yet. Lisa makes so much sense, especially, I mean, the people that we ask to be on our show are people that we know are very passionate about a TV show from, you know, quite a while ago, given the, you know, episodes we're talking about, that are, you know, very fanatical about their obsessions and are likely working on things that we really admire. So they're people that are hard workers that, you know, did something with their lives that we would want to talk to. So it doesn't surprise me that those are, you know, that's what Lisa Simpson grows up to be. People
right.
that have written on shows and been on Jeopardy and have children's books and, you know, things like that. So it makes sense to us, but we still like to hear it.
Yeah.
The episode where school's out, I think it's the PTA disbands, where Lisa needs validation. She needs gold stars and A's on the fridge. Like, that's my unpleasant side as a kid, and I really saw myself in that.
Yeah, no, that's my unpleasant side as an adult. So I relate to that sometimes, too. I mean, it's like I can feel very confident one day, and then I get mildly rejected by something, and I'm like, I'm going to walk into the sea now.
Yeah.
It's hard.
I forget what the device is that Lisa has in that episode where she presses a button, and then it, like, simulates, like, a classroom experience where the teacher's just is that gum? I have to revisit that episode. It's been a while.
It's like the Temple Grandin hug machine. Didn't think that we'd get to that reference on this podcast, did you, listeners? Anyway.
Yeah, any closing thoughts about this episode? We sometimes ask if you could write something on the chalkboard, not as eloquently, unless you have something prepared. What is the lesson or takeaway from this episode, do you think?
I mean, I feel like it's always tempting to talk about, you know, whatever the emotional family thing is. But in this episode, honestly, that feels a little bit tacked on. Like, here's your 20 seconds of heart at the end of the episode where Bart writes hero on his dad's head instead of loser or whatever. I mean, to me, the real the real fun of this episode is that they didn't know their show was going to run for 25 more years. They thought this was their chance to do all their sci-fi jokes. So you get, you know, multiple Star Trek jokes, very elaborate Gamesters of Triskelion Star Trek reference. You get multiple 2001 jokes, get an alien joke, get Planet of the Apes jokes. It's really just a rich vein for sci-fi fans.
Yeah, totally.
And that's what I love about it.
But do you think that that's the way that if you were to run a show like The Simpsons, do you think that's the way to do it? To not pull any punches and to just go for jam-packing an episode like this with as much jokes as possible?
No, I think I'm actually against that. Like,
really?
Then you get Family Guy, you know?
Yeah.
But something about the way it's done here, you know, it's not just these sort of random cutaway gags, but it's organically, you know, it's very cleverly structured with an itchy and scratchy that lets them pack in a lot of those references.
Yeah.
And because Homer is going to space in the episode, it feels organic and it feels like the time to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Man, I can't even say the words.
Julia's crying right now.
I'm crying right now. No, I love this episode. And I think that it's a great example. Like, if we were to send, you know, I'll say a handful of episodes to our insect overlords to show what American, the height of American comedy and entertainment is, I would include this episode.
I love that. Well, you're leading the judge a little bit if you do that.
I know.
See, we
true.
Respect you. But no, I agree with that. That's smart. That's a list I want to make because I love lists.
Yeah. This I know.
Well, thank you so much for being a guest on the show. You were a wonderful person to talk to. Where can people find anything that you have just put out or are working on?
Or attend your trivia night.
If you live in Seattle, maybe I'll pop up at a trivia night, but I wouldn't count on it.
You said like twice a year? Yeah, good luck, people.
They can put it on their iCals.
I'm at Ken Jennings on Twitter. I just finished a series of amazing facts books for smart kids called The Junior Genius Guide. So
oh, cool.
If you are or know a child who would love to know more about astronauts or mummies or dinosaurs, that kind of thing, there's probably a book for it.
Yay.
That's awesome. I love that.
Yeah, thank you so much. And you can find us on @SimpsonsPod on Twitter and email us at everythingscomingup@gmail.com. And Julia, where can people find you?
@JuliaPrescott on all the things. Allie, what about you?
Hey, thanks so much for asking. You can find me @AllieGertz on all the things. And we will see you next week.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
When you're down and troubled and you need a helping hand, and nothing, oh, nothing is going right, close your eyes.